I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon, the 30th of April. Ames McGinnis is joining us the first hour of our program today, associate professor in the Department of History at UW-Milwaukee. He teaches socialism, Latin America, global history, world history, and many other courses. And we asked him to join us today to talk about socialism for several reasons. Tomorrow is May Day, which is bound with a struggle for the shorter workday and a demand for higher wages. It will be celebrated in many countries. Number two, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, a Democratic socialist, has entered the presidential race, saying that he promises to fight obscene levels of income disparity and a campaign finance system that he says is a real disgrace. And number three, 105 years ago on April 3rd, Milwaukee became the first and only major city in this country to elect a socialist mayor. And socialist governing continued until Frank Zeidler left office in 1960, a long era of Milwaukee socialism. Why, we will ask Professor McGinnis, and why has socialism become a derogatory word? We'll be welcoming phone calls from you. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And while you're remembering phone numbers, please also remember we're in our Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. So if you can make a donation, we would dearly appreciate that. And you can call for your donation, 888-202-2552, or go to WPR.org. Professor Ames McGinnis, thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Our great pleasure. Let's talk about when and why socialism. The president has been called a socialist in a derogatory way. Socialism seems to be not very highly thought of, and yet it's been such an important part of Milwaukee history. We have Senator Bernie Sanders announcing he's in the presidential race. When and why did it become a derogatory phrase?
Well, thank you. I think that's an excellent question. And I think that there's not a simple answer, because socialism has had many different lives, as it were, in U.S. political culture, but more broadly in world history. So the terms socialism and socialist have been reinvented and taken many different forms since the early 19th century. And that's true also of anti-socialism. Or hatred of socialism has taken different forms. I think if you had to say, you know, one important watershed, certainly it's not the first time that socialism or socialists are vilified, but, you know, I think one important watershed that anybody would immediately think of would be the era of the Cold War, the immediate aftermath of World War II. In the 1950s, the so-called Red Scare, and it was really actually the second or the third Red Scare in U.S. history, depending on how you want to quantify them. And of course, Wisconsin's own Senator Joseph McCarthy was the most visible person who advocated persecution of communists and socialists. But by the 1950s, he was in a long line of people doing that. And one of the great puzzles of Wisconsin political history is that, you know, how could Wisconsin elect Senator Joseph McCarthy, this great enemy of the Reds, at a moment when Milwaukee is governed by a mayor, Frank Zeidler, who is a socialist? How could those two things happen in the same state?
Yes, we ask that a lot about political events that take place, where one extreme certainly or the other. Tomorrow, when May Day is celebrated around the world, I know you teach world history, is this, we sometimes equate this being a celebration of communism on May 1st. Is it a celebration of socialism? Is it a celebration of communism? Or is it just a celebration of the American worker or the world worker asking for a fair deal?
I think it could be all of those things. And it is all of those things, depending on who is celebrating it, when, and where. So I know that sounds a little mealy-mouthed, but actually, I think what it means, what it demands of us as citizens, and for me as a historian, is to pay attention to the facts that pertain to the specific context in which it's being celebrated. When May Day was first, the origins of modern of what you could call modern May Day as a celebration of working people's rights date back to 1886 in the United industrial cities in the United States, and specifically a strike called by the Knights of Labor for an eight-hour day that took its most dramatic forms in Chicago and in Milwaukee, but occurred elsewhere. And the people who went out on strike and advocated for an eight-hour day included some people whom we could call socialists, other people whom we could describe as anarchists, but also Knights of Labor and labor act, people involved in organized labor who wouldn't have been comfortable calling themselves socialists or anarchists. It was a very homogenous group. Later on, and I can talk about this at greater length, but in 1887, at the Second Socialist International in Paris, as a commemoration of what had happened the previous year in the United States, all the socialist parties and organizations that gather in Paris in 1887 vote and establish May 1st is the International Day of Working Men's or Working People's Solidarity. In the aftermath, then, different groups with very different political agendas seize the holiday and invest it with very different meanings.
It seems to me as though it has some meaning, and I don't know if there will be demonstrations in this country tomorrow or not, perhaps you know about this, that we're living in an age similar to a gilded kind of age. We've been hearing with this great disparity between those who have and those who haven't, big movements for an increase in minimum wage, particularly among people who are in the service industry in this country. Will there be a focus tomorrow, sort of a resurrection of not an eight-hour workday, but fair pay for a full day's work?
Well, I think I certainly agree with you. That's on a lot of people's minds. Mm-hmm. And one interesting question will be the degree to which people will want to connect themselves to that longer history of labor protest or not. But, you know, one in Milwaukee tomorrow, Voces de la Frontera, the workers' rights, human rights, immigrant rights organization, has chosen May 1st for a day of the march from their headquarters on the south side to the Milwaukee County courthouse from 11 to 1 p.m. And that's not a coincidence, I think, that Voces de la Frontera has chosen May 1st. They've been doing that for some years now. It's I think, a way to connect with that longer history of struggles for workers' rights that importantly does have its beginnings actually in Milwaukee in 1886.
You know, when you think about what you said something earlier, that they were concerned about an eight-hour workday, we forget how people used to work, and it wasn't all that long ago. An eight-hour workday is pretty much taken for granted these days, but people used to work, you know, 6 days a week and 10, 12 hours a day. They worked all the time.
I think that's true. At the same time, you know, I was just speaking earlier this morning with students of mine, and I think a lot of my students actually can really relate to you know, any single one of their employers may not be employing them for more than 40 hours a week, but students now, just to get the money to get an education and to keep their heads above water in terms of debt, you know, they have a job as students, but they're taking on one, two, or three jobs. So I think a lot of the idea of just having a break from having to sell their labor or labor power to be able to devote to the cultivation of their families or their own intellects, I think in some ways that it resonates, the demands of strikers in 1886, I think, resonate with a lot of students at public universities right now.
Let's talk about it, and we'll take phone calls on Milwaukee's long, long history of being led by socialist mayors. It was 105 years ago on April 5th, I believe, that Emil Zeidel was elected mayor, the first socialist mayor, I believe, in the country. Was it partially the reason for his election, the population, the German population, the free thinkers, the people who were, you know, intellectuals and really concerned about the plight of the workers who came from Germany that made that election possible? What was it?
Well, I think certainly all those things are factors. I think Emil Zeidel, the way I would describe him, is the first mayor of a large U.S., the first socialist mayor of a large U.S. city. And we have to remember that this is before the Bolshevik Revolution. So there was a time, a brief period of time, in 1910, when Milwaukee could be described as the most socialist city, not just in the United States, but in the world.
Goodness.
Socialists really wield more power in the city of Milwaukee than they do anywhere else on the planet. And to get to your answer about how he's elected, it's a very, in some ways, a very heterogeneous a political coalition that certainly includes immigrants and German-speaking immigrants. But it includes, this is before World War I. There are a lot of English speakers, people from other ethnicities and groups. A lot of people, in the 1910 vote was in part a protest election, protesting people who wouldn't necessarily call themselves socialists under other circumstances, but were really dismayed by the level of political corruption in the city. So I think, but 1910, so in some ways it is a product of a specific moment and a coalition that turns out to be more transient than we might think, but also builds on years of political organizing in the labor movement and also among democratic socialist organizers in the city of Milwaukee that dates back to 1886, this key year in the history of May Day. And if you'd like, I can talk a little bit more about what happened in Milwaukee in 1886 and why it's so important for that, the subsequent success of electoral success of socialists in Milwaukee in the 20th century.
I would definitely like for you to do this if you can wait for just a moment. Thank you. And we'll talk about, a lot of people, we talked about socialism being a derogatory word. It's interesting that some have said, including historian John Goethe, who doesn't call himself a socialist, but is gall-darn thankful that the city was ruled by socialists because they did so many things in this city during a long period of time. We'll highlight some of those. And we will welcome your phone calls. If you want to join our conversation with Ames McGinnis, associate professor in the Department of History at UW-Milwaukee, he teaches courses on socialism, Latin America, global history, world history. We're talking about a couple of issues because how often do we get a chance to talk about socialism? I guess the conversation prompted with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders entering the presidential race, will he be highlighting issues that are important to you? Do you think it's an important person to have in this race? Also, we're looking at the long history of socialism in the city of Milwaukee, where we are. And tomorrow is May Day, which is tied with a struggle for a shorter work day, demand for higher wages. And so we're talking about all of those issues this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn with KP Whaley, and as you know, this is Wisconsin Public Radio's spring membership drive. You know that you can count on us for great discussions, and it is your gift, whatever amount you can give us, that makes these discussions possible. So please give now. Here's how you do it, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Hi, KP.
Hello, Kathleen. Hi. Thanks for having me in today.
Yeah, anytime you want to come in here and talk, it's okay by me.
I'm very excited. We heard from a dozen listeners last hour, and we want to thank everyone for your pledges. We have a goal this hour by 2 o'clock to reach 9 pledges. I think that's an easy goal for our listeners, right?
I hope so.
These goals really do help make sure that WPR has the money to pay for the programs that you rely on, like the Kathleen Dunn Show. So help me meet the goal with your gift of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know you enjoy this program. It's a fascinating conversation about Milwaukee's socialist history and Bernie Sanders entering the presidential race. Where else do you get conversations like this, or the Joy Cardine Show, the Larry Miller Show, Zorba Pastor on Your Health, Radio Lab, Old Time Radio, all of the shows. It's an incredible service that you rely on every day.
It's a service that really gives you a window into the world like none other. And we hope that you will support the exciting mix of shows that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this membership drive, you can choose something that KP is particularly fond of. It's the I Love WPR magnets, and I can see why. They're very attractive, and it's a thank you gift for your pledge of $60 or more, which most of you ought to be able to do. It's $5 a month for all of this information you get, and it's like going to school. Your pledge supports the programs, and you will love them. You get a large magnet, and you get a small magnet.
Yeah, I'll put my large one on my car. I'll put my small one on my bike.
Excellent.
And then as I ride around town, everyone in town will know how much I love WPR. pledge for the magnets is just a $60 pledge, so do so now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I listen to Wisconsin Public Radio because it's one of the best mixes that I can find of both highly entertaining and highly useful and informative information. Wisconsin Public Radio really has a great variety in the type of programs they put on. It's very difficult to get bored of listening to WPR. I only used to listen to public radio in the car. I've recently started listening to public radio on online streaming. The variety and quality of the broadcasts are really enough to keep someone, you know, tuning back in for more time and time again. I'm Ben Martin from Minnesota, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for variety and entertainment.
Thank you, Ben. And you can pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and KP Whaley is joining me, and we are asking quite simply for your support of WPR during this, our spring membership drive. I don't know what your gift might be. Maybe it's $5 a month, or it's $10 or $20 a month. Whatever it is, we thank you so much for it.
And you'll become part of the Wisconsin Public Radio's community of givers as well. You're a listener now. Maybe you have been for a long time, but we'd like you to become a part of the community of members. So that's people who support the programs that they value.
We do these so often. I mean, for so many years we've done these. We don't have a lot of pledge drives, but we think that everybody supports these programs all the time, that they listen all the time. But I know that there's somebody that's never given before. So you may want to start with a pledge of $5 a month, and you'll feel really good when you do that. It starts with your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Yeah, in fact, Kathleen, we have two people who have pledged for the first time already this
Excellent.
Hour.
So, thank you.
Let's join those other join those two people if you've never pledged before, and pledge now. When you listen to WPR, you're not alone. Sure, you might be alone in your car, or you might be alone in your home or office, but you're sharing the experience really with everyone around the state, with all of these listeners.
And we have a lot in common. We share values that bind us together, and one of the huge values is gathering information and being wonderful members of this democracy. Your support helps all of us share the cost of these programs. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And supporting Wisconsin Public Radio right now is a great thing to do with just a few minutes of your time. That's why we take these few-minute breaks. All we need is your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay. That's all.
And your gift supports the stories and all of the programs that keep you connected to the world. Give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And you can think of your contribution to WPR as an investment in your future listening. Give us just a few minutes of your time and your donation in any amount. And in return, you'll get lots of great programs in the future.
How do you donate? You go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. In just a few minutes, you'll have made a very wise investment.
And we picked up some more pledges. We have nine,
All right.
nine more pledges to go in the next 40 minutes or so that we have. So give your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It really does help out.
And we want to remind you, this pledge drive, we're offering something special. It is the I Love WPR magnet, a pledge at $5 a month or $60 a year, which is pretty reasonable. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
Have we talked about sustainers? I don't think we've talked about sustainers yet.
Well, would you
yet,
please? Please do that.
Sustainers are the easiest way to contribute, and you can become one right now. It's easy to set up a convenient, ongoing, monthly donation from your bank account or credit card, and then you don't have to think about it. You just sign up, and it's taken care of. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Eric from Madison says, it is important for me to support the organizations and services I like.
And Sandra from Sullivan says she listens to us every day, but has been inconsistent in donating, so she decided to become a sustainer.
Oh, thank you, Sandra.
Thank you, Sandra.
Absolutely. Thank you,
KP. You can become
KP.
A sustainer as well.
Oh, how?
WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you, KP Whaley, our terrific producer. We're talking about socialism this day before May Day and the day after. I think he announced yesterday that Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders entered the presidential race. We're looking at issues of inequality, and we're looking at the city of Milwaukee 105 years ago, where we became the first and only major city in this country to elect a socialist mayor, and we were ruled by socialist mayors here in this city until 1960. Before we go to 1886, I promised you that we would do that, Ames. Let's go to an email. Can you please, Ames, define what socialism is? What countries in the world are considered socialist, and how do they fare when stacked against other countries?
Thank you for that question. And I think, I'm not going to be able to offer a simple one or two sentence definition of socialism. Let me kind of answer the question in this way, that since the early 19th century into the present, people have used the word socialism and socialist as a way to describe a polity or way of organizing people's economic, political lives in some way that is an alternative to capitalism, and for socialists themselves better than capitalism. But the specifics of that vision have varied tremendously. You know, that from socialists who reject not only capitalism, but the state and the military, who are more kind of anarchist in their orientation, to people who call themselves socialists, who argue that economic and political power should be concentrated in a single political party that has monopolized control over the government. So there's a tremendous amount of, I think what they share in common is a sense of a need for some kind of alternative to capitalism. But that alternative has taken a lot of different forms over time. So if you were to ask Frank Zeidler, who was the socialist mayor of Milwaukee from 1948 to 1960, I do this with a sense of humility. I don't want to try to speak for him, especially now that he's passed away. But I think if you were to ask him, what countries in the world right now are currently governed by socialists, I think he would say none.
Really?
Yeah, I think that there wouldn't be a single government anywhere that would meet his ideals of what being a socialist would mean. And he's someone who believed very profoundly in democracy, not just in a political sense, but as an economic sense. And no country would meet his standards. But there are countries that are governed by people who call themselves socialists, and they would argue very strongly that they are. And those countries include, I'm sure there are more, but the ones that come to mind right now, it's quite a range. France would be one, Venezuela, Ecuador, Cuba, and North Korea.
North Korea will call itself socialist.
Well, socialist or communist, or at least use that kind of language in their political ideology. Huh. So there's quite a bit of a difference between France and North Korea. But here's another way to think about it. If I just give that short list, it makes it seem like socialism is kind of an anomaly. And in some ways it is, but another way to think about it is that almost every European country and most countries in South Asia and East Asia and Latin America has a socialist party or a party that speaks to socialist ideals and elects people to national legislatures and to local municipal office, even if the government that happens to control these countries doesn't describe itself as socialist. So if you think about it in that way, the United States is really the anomaly. We're one of the few functioning polities in the world right now that doesn't have a political party that calls itself socialist and claims to specifically represent the economic and political interests of working class people. Mm. We're very unusual in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to 1886 for a moment. I promised you I would not forget that year, and to ask you, why was that significant here?
As I mentioned earlier, 18 May 1st first becomes officially an International Day of Working People Solidarity in 1887 in commemoration of strikes that take place in Milwaukee, Chicago, and elsewhere in the United States in 1886. And after that, in the aftermath of that, I think May 1st becomes most identified in kind of popular history in the United States and Latin America and Europe with events in Chicago, the so-called Haymarket affair, and the Haymarket martyrs, or people who were unjustly tried and convicted, accused of throwing a bomb, and they're railroaded, and most of them are executed, some are pardoned, and then in the aftermath, the events in Chicago and the Haymarket affair comes to monopolize the memory of May 1st. Not just in the United States, but globally. Anarchists in Spain and in Latin America really claim this May 1st as a holiday for themselves. And they're very critical of capitalism, but they're also very critical of the notion that a socialist revolution can be won through the ballot or through the state. They're very critical of the state. Meanwhile, socialists who are what eventually become communist parties also adopt May 1st as an International Day of Working People Solidarity. And this is true in the Soviet Union after the Bolshevik Revolution, in the Soviet bloc, and it's true today in other communist countries. Celebrate May 1st as a working day, as a day of working class solidarity. But in the Soviet Union, by the final years of the Soviet Union, was a celebration of military power, the might of the state, something that anarchists would have found really anathema. Meanwhile, the memory of May 1st in Milwaukee, in some ways, kind of disappeared. Hmm. Even though when people declared it an International Day of Commemoration in Paris in 1887, they were thinking not of the Haymarket martyrs, because the Haymarket martyrs had been martyred yet. They were thinking about everybody who had sacrificed their lives for justice, for working class people in the United States. And in Bayview, on May 5th of 1886, the state militia was called in by the then governor of Wisconsin and fired on striking workers, and at least seven people died. So in many ways, the beginnings of May Day as a working people's holiday began as a commemoration of people who died, and no larger number of people died during that strike than in Milwaukee. And in Milwaukee, it was a tragedy for working class people, but in Milwaukee, people got mad. Across the political spectrum and across classes, and in the aftermath of this state militia's firing on strikers, people organize what becomes the People's Party, and begins to strengthen both the organized labor movement, but also to create a political party that is specifically oriented around the concerns of working class people. And so, when socialists take the city government, when they elect Emil Seidel as mayor in 1910. And they elect other socialists to other offices in the city and county government. It's really a culmination of an organizing effort that began in the ashes of the massacre that took place in Bayview on May 5th of 1886.
Let's go to a phone call, and it's David who's on the road. Hi, David.
Hey, how you doing?
All right, David. Go right ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm from a blue-collar family, have been my whole life. The one thing my dad always drowned into me was work hard and work smart. You know, you get an honest day's wage for an honest day's pay. But what I'd like to say about this is that you've got all your CEOs and all your fat cats that are making tons of money, billions of dollars a year, plus they get stock options and bonuses. And they want to only pay us $10, $11, $12 an hour, when we are the ones that put them where they're at, and they're making the money that they're making. They need to level the playing field and create it so everybody can make a livable wage. I'd love to trade with Warren Buffett and say, I'll tell you what, you live on $20,000 a year, and I'll live on your salary for 1 year, and then you tell me in 1 year's time how well you were treated and how well that suited you. I'll take my comments off the air.
Thank you, David. Thanks very much for your call.
Well, thank you. I mean, what you just said in a nutshell, kind of paraphrased what you might have heard from Victor Berger when he was elected from Milwaukee as the first socialist to the U.S. House of Representatives. He used almost exactly the language that you just used. And basically his point is, who produces wealth in our society? Who makes our society possible? And why is it that the fruits of people's labor are concentrated in the hands of the few and not shared more equitably? A second point that he would make, which you didn't say, but this is what Victor Berger would say, is, look, the government is already involved in our economy in so many different ways, schools, roads, etc. But the way that the government is involved in our economy benefits disproportionately the wealthiest people in our society. So it's not about getting the government in or out of the economy. The government's already in the economy, and it's in the economy in a way that's benefiting the rich and not the majority. So let's have the government work for all of us rather than for the few.
Bernie Sanders, in announcing that he's running for president, said that he promised to fight obscene levels of income disparity in a campaign finance system that is a real disgrace. Do you think that he moves the presumed Democratic candidate or the front runner, Hillary Clinton? She already has been addressing those issues some, but is this an issue that is resonating so much, not just with David, with so many Americans, that the Democratic Party must embrace what may be a socialist philosophy in this presidential election?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and unless Bernie Sanders wins the nomination, it's hard for me to imagine the Democratic candidate describing herself or himself as a socialist or inspired by socialism, simply because the word has become rendered so poisonous in our political culture. But I think, I don't know that much about Bernie Sanders, and I can't claim to speak for him, but I can make the larger point that, you know, the labor movement in the United States since the New Deal, if not before, has been in a very tight alliance with the Democratic Party. And I don't think it's extraordinarily insightful for me to say that a lot of labor leaders at this point in history are really wondering what they've gotten out of that alliance and are feeling taken for granted. I think if Bernie Sanders, who's of course not a member of the Democratic Party, defined himself as an independent, I think what one of the things he may be hoping is to pull the Democratic Party back more into the direction of the majority of the American people and working class people by, in a sense, declaring some independence from the party establishment. In some ways, you know, I'm sure Bernie Sanders wouldn't appreciate this comparison, but it's a little bit similar to the gamble that the Tea Party has made with the Republican Party.
Yeah. We are welcoming more phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. On this day before May Day, we are talking about socialism. Bernie Sanders is running for president. It marks 105 years ago, earlier this month, that Milwaukee became the first and only major city in this country to elect a socialist mayor. I tend to think of clean government and beautiful parks in Milwaukee as one of the results of so long a rule by socialist mayors. We'll ask Ames McGinnis if he believes that to be the case as well. And we'll go to you. We have lines open for you. 800-486-8655 is the number on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are in our spring membership drive, and your support is the foundation of all that we do. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your place for great programs. We'll be back to our discussion of socialism and our guest in just a moment. First, KP Whaley is with me right now, and we are encouraging you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 at this very moment to make your gift in support of all these programs that you count on.
This very moment.
Please.
We need only one more pledge to meet our goal already, so that's easy enough. Go to the phone now, 888-202-2552. Make your donation to support this program and all the great programs that you enjoy here at WPR. You can also pledge online at WPR.org.
KP and I have reached a point where we finish each other's sentences. It really is amazing how we're on the same page when it comes to what we think may be important. We bring different ideas to the table and work very hard. I hope you're aware of how phenomenal his work is in getting these great guests on the air, and you have a chance to speak with them as well. You don't find shows like this, well, I don't know where else you find them, and this show is possible, pledge by pledge, only on listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio. Please give now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And in true democracy, you get to decide on how much that pledge is as well. So every pledge really does matter, and every pledge helps pay for the programs that you enjoy, whether it's $5 a month pledge or a simple $10 pledge one-time gift. During this drive, you can ask for, however, our I Love WPR magnets when you give a gift of $60 or more.
And you'll get a large magnet and a small magnet. You can put them on your icebox, your otherwise known as a refrigerator, or whatever you would like. Show your love for WPR. Ask for these magnets when you give $60 or more. It's $5 a month, WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And, you know, when you think about what public radio means, public radio means listener supported radio.
Yeah, it does. And we do appreciate business contributions and federal and state dollars. Listener support, though, is the single largest source of WPR's budget. Your contribution of any amount really matters. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
I'm Mary Corcor, member of the board of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. WPR is my companion. In the house, the barn, the car, I depend upon it for news, opinion, entertainment, and community. WPR provides me with the sort of civilized discourse that's so desperately needed in our society today. I'm proud to be a longtime listener, supporter, and now board member of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you so much, Mary. There's been a lot of news about the state budget. As proposed, the budget puts state funding for Wisconsin Public Broadcasting at risk. And you tell us all the time how much you value the lasting impact of broadcasting programs, news, conversations, music, even entertainment.
And that's why Wisconsin Public Broadcasting, including WPR, is working hard to address the budget challenges as the process goes forward. Meanwhile, listener support is more important than ever. So please make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Listening to Wisconsin Public Radio makes driving, working, even sitting down in your favorite chair a different experience. It's a much better experience.
And your support really helps make WPR possible, and it turns ordinary activities into extraordinary activities. If you think about it, your life is so much better with WPR in it. So why not give now? WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
And pledging is a very quick, easy process.
So
when
quick.
You become a sustained, it's quick. It's very
so
quick.
Easy.
Are you going to sing a song?
No.
You should. That sounded like the beginning of one. When you become a sustainer, you really simplify your donation. You'll make automatic monthly gifts from your bank account or your credit card.
It's sustaining really is my favorite way to give, because it's like signing up for Hulu or Netflix,
right,
or one of these services where they bring you entertainment and you just get it taken out every month.
Yeah.
Well, WPR, think about it the same way. It is easy to do. It renews automatically each year, so your membership is always current. When you hear the pledge drives, you don't have to feel guilty about not giving because you've already given. So pick an amount that works for you, say $10 a month, and become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And whatever you can give, a contribution of any amount makes a difference. Here are some suggestions. As KP talked about, subscriptions for things like Netflix or cable television. That's a huge outlay.
Netflix
of money.
Is a little bit more affordable. It's like
than
$10.
Cable television. $10
a
I know.
Month. $10 a month. You can afford $10 a month.
Right. We pay that for cable. Right. Or we pay more than that for cable, but for those services, you're right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, think about coffee.
All right.
You know, which, like WPR, is probably something you look forward to every day. Maybe you don't think about it. You know, that's a $2, $3 a day, right?
Yeah.
That's adds up. And if you pledge that amount, it will really make a huge difference. So, you pick the amount. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I bring my own coffee, but I buy myself chocolate chip cookies.
Yes, you do.
Too often, and that adds up, doesn't it? Let's just get as many pledges as we can.
Need more pledges.
We need just more pledges. So your gift right now, WPR.org, 888-202-2552 will really help.
And again, for a $60 pledge, you can pick up the magnets. I love WPR. Put them on things that you love and drive around town and show everyone your love for WPR.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, KP. We're talking about socialism this hour of the program. Tomorrow is May Day, and we're looking at Bernie Sanders' entry into the presidential race and the long history of socialist mayors, which really fashioned the way the city is right now. The great park system. We'll talk about clean government with our guests, but we have people who are calling in, too. Ames McGinnis is with us, associate professor in the Department of History at UW-Milwaukee. We asked him to talk about socialism today. He teaches a course on socialism, also on Latin America, global history, world history, and other courses as well. Dennis in Milwaukee, our next caller, Ames. Hi, Dennis.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, how are you?
Not too bad. Just taking a lunch break enough. So the reason why I was calling is I know you're talking about Emil Seidel. He's actually my great-great-grandpa.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
So, I would love to. You should please send me an email after the show. I'd love to talk with you.
I actually have his diary from when he was growing up, and it's like his family history.
Oh, he'll really want to talk to you.
Please do be. My email address is my first name spelled backwards at uwm.edu.
So you want to spell your first name backwards first?
Yeah. SMIA at UWM.edu.
SMIA at UWM.edu. You got that, Dennis? He'll want to speak with you.
SMIA at UWM.edu. Okay. Yeah, I put that down. But anyways, I was just kind of calling in to get some comments about it. I think that honestly what's been going on with politics in Wisconsin, and it's really puts a lot of pressure on the low-income parts of this city and state. You know, a lot of the people, they don't have a livable wage. They really struggle. And then on top of it, just the access to different, better jobs and just being able to get there. Even at, like, for example, we had options for transit in the past to get people out to some of the suburbs, and that hasn't gone through. We had I believe it was like a tram or a train going out to Madison to connect for better commerce out here. And every step of the way, it seems like we get a lot of pushback. People aren't able to afford living, and I work in the social services. I'm a case manager on the south side of Milwaukee. And honestly, like, for example, today I was at the Milwaukee housing authority, and for example, because of the budget cuts, people are going to have to pay, like, they have stuff like rent assistance programs. They're very limited. There's actually crazy long waiting lists. Like, for example, most of my clients that I work with, if they are on one, it takes anywhere from 6 months to a couple of years to actually get in there from the time they sign up. And it can, because of these budget cuts, they're having to pay more. And these people, a lot of them, because of severe mental health issues or other disabilities, aren't able to work. There are things like the DVR where we're trying to get them back into work. But because of it, you know, their budgets are being more and more constrained, and it's even with the Social Security. And I know a lot of people have that opinion. Oh, the person with the Social Security just kind of mooching off the government. But a lot of them have very severe disabilities, and you know, I'm trying to help them stabilize. But until then, they really won't be able to, you know, go out and be a productive part of society. But for them to get to that point, they need support. They need the help of, you know, the state to be able to help them get back on track with their lives. But when, for example, someone is only gets about $800 a month, and to try to set them up with housing, because a lot of most places want you to have at least double the amount of the rent. So that's pretty much, you're limited to finding a place where you only have to pay $400 a month for rent.
Yeah. Dennis, we thank you for the call. We want to make sure that you get a hold, because I'm sure your family memories in the diary will be very, very important. What about his main ideas here, that we're in this together, that we need to bring everybody up? Is that a socialist philosophy, or is that just a decent human being philosophy? Where does that come from?
Well, I think it could be all of the above. You know, I think specifically thinking about Dennis's grandfather, right, Emil Seidel, I think Emil Seidel himself is a working class person who didn't graduate from college, but still believed that as a citizen, he had a right and a responsibility to have a voice in the cities and the nation's affairs. And certainly, Emil Seidel and other socialists make Milwaukee a city government that really serves the city's majority and working class. Very much about creating, Milwaukee plays a really revolutionary role in creating the origins of public housing, supporting public education, schools,
libraries,
vaccinations, libraries, etc. Now, what may catch some people by surprise today is that socialists also advocated lowering taxes, and they succeeded at lowering taxes. One of the revolutionary things that Milwaukee socialists did was that they introduced accounting into city governance in unprecedented ways. So they said, yes, we're going to use more public resources to support the public good, but we're also going to provide a level of transparency and mechanisms so that you can be assured that your tax money is being used responsibly in the way that you want to use it. Socialists were very interested in increasing home ownership, for instance. So one of the reasons why they support public schools and public services is in part so that working class Milwaukeeans can spend more of the money that they earn on the things that they want and need. Socialism, it's certainly about providing these services. It's also about lowering taxes by providing services more efficiently, things that people need efficiently at a lower cost than the market or private industry would be able to provide them.
Mm-hmm. I also wonder how influential the socialists were in creating this beautiful system of parks in Milwaukee County. There are so many that are just gorgeous, and they're very large, and a lot of people use them.
That's very true, and Charles Whitnall is the key figure in Milwaukee's park system, although Daniel Hone and Frank Seidler also play such an important role in that. And, our lakefront is the greatest example of this, and John Gerda in The Making of Milwaukee is such a wonderful book. He writes very eloquently about this. You know, the Bolsheviks, who also called themselves socialists or communists, in 1917, the Bolshevik Revolution, they go about expropriating the rich, taking away their property, nationalizing things. Socialists in Milwaukee were Democrats who believed that socialism could happen through the ballot box, not through violence. So rather than expropriating the wealthy people who had their mansions along the lakefront, instead, Milwaukee socialists just built a new lakefront. Most people in Milwaukee don't realize that a lot of what we think of as being the lakefront is landfill. It's public land that was created anew so that everybody, not just rich people, could have access to recreational space near the lake. And it also had the additional goal of raising wages for working people in Milwaukee by providing unemployed people with jobs. You know, and now, of course, the lakefront is one of the great assets for the city in general.
Sure
it's,
is.
It's one of the things that our business leaders tout as one of the chief attractions for bringing business and corporations to Milwaukee. And ironically, that a resource wouldn't exist without Milwaukee socialists.
Yeah. Ames, thank you very much for being with us. It seems brief. For most stations, this would have been a long conversation, but we'll have you back to talk more about all of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Ames McGinnis with us talking about socialism, associate professor, Department of History, UW-Milwaukee. And tomorrow is May Day, so we thought we would talk about socialism in Milwaukee this hour of the program. I'm Kathleen Down. K.P. Whaley is also joining me. We are going to ask for just a couple moments of your time to tell you about the Wisconsin Radio Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. And our goal is to keep bringing you topics like this hour's topic, and it's your support that makes it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is, isn't it? It is. Give now.
Give now. Take a few minutes of your time this hour to make many more hours like this possible. Just choose a gift amount that works for you. Make a pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And during the membership drive, you get the new I Love WPR magnets. When you give $60, that's $5 a month, which should be doable for most of you. Your donation will support the programs you count on. Did I say a month? It's $60 a year.
$60. Yeah.
That's $60. One pledge. You can do $60. One pledge. You get the magnets and you feel
both.
Great.
Two magnets.
You get two magnets. And you feel really good.
And you show how much you love WPR to everyone that sees
them. Right.
You know, you also may be interested in playing a larger role in supporting WPR through the 9XM Leadership Circle. It's a growing group of listeners who contribute $1,200 or more a year to support WPR.
Wisconsin Public Radio, your station. It wakes you up in the morning. You ride with us on your commute. It keeps you company during the day. And the beauty is that you get to decide how much to pay for the programs you enjoy.
Yeah, your gift really combined with donations from many other listeners all add up to WPR's single largest source of funding. So become our next new member right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And think of the connections. I mean, just during this hour, our guest, Professor McGinnis, makes contact with somebody who calls in who's Mayor Zeidel's, you know, grandson, who's got his diary, for heaven's sake. Those kinds of things happen all the time,
it just astounds me.
It's such a good thing.
We're putting listeners on hold all the time to get phone numbers exchanged with guests.
Right, I know. I know, we make connections. That's what we do. It's a good thing. How do you pledge again, KP?
You can go online, WPR.org, or dial 888-202-2552.
Thank you. And thanks to Scotty Myers for producing the hour. Thanks to Katie Madsen-Cyrus for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee.